Good evening, everyone. This is Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. This is
Hi.
Monday night, August the 11th. Hey, Rebecca.
Hello,
we
hello.
We're so excited to be coming to you tonight. This is actually a pre-recorded show as we speak. Jen is me. I am going to be in Geneva, Illinois, but I will have just arrived with my moving truck that day, so we decided it would be best to go ahead and pre-record this. Rebecca is in New York City as we speak.
No, well, I'm in North Carolina now.
I know. While we were recording this, she's in North Carolina.
Yeah.
By the time this airs, she's going to be back in New York.
True.
We had a fabulous show 2 weeks ago with Jason Herod. If you haven't listened to that episode, I encourage you to go back and listen to that. That was from July the 28th. And also on August 25th, we are going to be joined by Doug Padgett, who's the founding pastor of Solomon's Porch in Minnesota and also working on a new progressive Christian project called Convergence. And I'm really excited to have Doug on the air with us in 2 weeks. You are listening, as I said, to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca on the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. Most of our shows are live call-in shows, and we encourage you to do that. We will be on live with Doug in 2 weeks. But tonight, we are really excited to be joined by Troy Bronsing. Troy is a Presbyterian pastor in Cincinnati, Ohio, and is also in the midst of transition, as are Rebecca and myself. And Troy is also an artist. And welcome, Troy. We're excited that you're on the show with us tonight.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks, Rebecca.
Hi, Troy. Thanks for coming on. That's so exciting. And I want you to tell us, this is Rebecca, and I'll just introduce myself really quick. I am the director of Family Music Ministries at the First Presbyterian Church in the city of New York, which is a really fancy way of saying I'm a children's choir director. And I'm excited to talk to Troy because, first of all, Troy, as Jen mentioned, you are going through some changes in your life. And can you just tell us a little bit about what's coming up and, you know, how that's sort of affecting your family and your work and how you are, you know, kind of what you have going on.
Sure. So, a lot of the work I do is retreat curation. I kind of work with creatives and people of faith and kind of helping groups listen to their life through design thought and kind of how the work we do with our hands and the work we do as crafters of various art, how that applies to, you can apply that same discipline to the work of our own inner lives and the lives we share with other community, with others in our community. So I've been curator for art and worship at Northminster Presbyterian Church here in Cincinnati for 2 years, and I'll be transitioning in the next month to forming a additional worshiping community, which will start kind of as a house church group. With some specific kind of missional practice-oriented kind of stuff for our gatherings to kind of help that group begin to think of, ways to be more engaged in the life of the city in northern Cincinnati and how to bring those stories into our shared spiritual formation. So that's shifting. My family is painting and refinishing the floors of a house that we're renting that we may end up buying. And we will move in there in the next week. And it's a 150-year-old Victorian home that's got a boiler system and window air conditioning units. And it's going to be a blast.
Goodness.
But we've tackled something kind of big. So that'll be kind of fun. Moving to the north side neighborhood in Cincy, which is a funky part kind of, right on the north end of the city. And, and I'm making plans for an event in Austin. And right now I'm in the process of kind of recruiting some of the other leaders for that event. So a lot of transitions.
A lot of transitions. That's exciting. Tell us more about your new project with the house church and house worship and how that. Can you explain sort of what that is to folks who may not be familiar with those kinds of terms and how that came about, where you got those ideas from?
Yeah, well, when I went to Columbia Seminary in Atlanta 2000 to 2004, and during that time got involved in Eastlake neighborhood, Eastlake Villages in Atlanta, and in a mixed income community there, and then moved to Southwest Atlanta and was also part of a kind of a mixed income, really diverse inner city community. And what we formed then as worshiping practices, we would do in our homes. So we'd often share a meal, and the way we would engage scripture and the Christian tradition would be through a lot more discussion, and then also hands-on stuff, things that you'd kind of recognize from art therapy and other kind of body prayer practices, that kind of stuff. And you can do that in a house, and slowly with what we formed at that point was called Neighbors Abbey. It was a church plant of the PCUSA in inner city Atlanta, and we eventually were in a community center, and it was a mixed community in terms of race, in terms of socioeconomic background, in terms of theology and politics, sexual orientation, you name it. It was all kind of mixed in there, and we were together through these regular conversations, kind of going, what is the reign of God, dreams of God have to do with our everyday life? So 2 years ago, I moved here to Cincinnati to a church with 50-plus years of history that had, at the time, four different worship gatherings, two of them in a sanctuary that felt like your typical Presbyterian liturgy with all mm-hmm. the Presbyterian robes and mm-hmm. whatnot, and then two of them that were contemporary worship services that had been started 12 years ago. And my responsibility was to work to develop those contemporary worship services to be more engaging in the way that Neighbors Abbey had been in Atlanta. Some of the work I do as a musician when it comes to rearranging music and writing original music, that's more similar to kind of Americana indie music than kind of the praise and worship radio hits. I was doing that work as well, and so that combined with art and more curating quarterly and kind of around the liturgical year different art exhibits and interactive art stuff, all of that we were trying to apply that into the contemporary worship service. And we kind of, as a group, some of the staff here and some of the other lay folks just felt like we had kind of pushed that as far as it could go, that the folks who were really accustomed to a praise and worship service struggled with other formats of music, with older liturgical practices like Lectio Divina and different kind of breath prayers and reading the office, daily offices, that sort of stuff. And so we just said, what if my work was more to pioneer a third approach that would be really engaging folks who wanted something that was more highly participatory and something that was more diverse. So it's, in some ways I'm getting to do, pretty soon I'll be able to do what it was I thought I was brought here to do from the beginning, but in other ways I've had 2 years of learning so much about this community and this church that can really equip me for this next work for it to more deeply integrate into the life and practices of the existing congregation here. So it'll be a little bit of both, kind of a pioneering satellite sort of thing, but then also integrating and kind of learning how those different communities would bless each other.
Hmm. Yeah, cool. Wow. Yeah, that's very cool. And I think really sort of forward thinking on the part of that worshiping community to be really, you know, exploring different ways of being church and figuring
Absolutely.
Out, you know, what's that going to look like for the future of
yeah.
this worshiping community. Is this the impetus for your move into a different community?
Completely synchronicity. Like it wasn't the two weren't particularly related. We were just in a situation. I mean, this is all just kind of nuts and bolts of family life. So we had an 11-year-old daughter who is going to go to a school for creative and performing arts that is downtown in Cincinnati. So we needed to be a little closer to there for just commute and carpool and bus and all that kind of stuff. And in some ways, some of the relationships we've built since arriving here have been in the city as well as in this community called Finneytown, which is in the northernmost part of Cincinnati proper. And so, so yeah, some of that is connected for sure, but it wasn't like we strategically said we're going to move to this neighborhood of Northside in order to expand the outreach of this congregation. Like, you know, some congregations start like a satellite service,
right,
to another campus. That hasn't been part of the aim with this yet at all. Really, the aim with this is that there would be a group of folks who are designing it themselves, that there's really a community-based design principle. So the community, the team that comes together would, borrowing from like Peter Block and some other folks who talk a lot about community organizing and organizing for change, the team, the buy-in on at the level of the founders, if you will, is to say, like, what is it we see as possible with the group that's here together? What are we together called to do? How much are we prepared to risk in doing that? What would it look like if we were, you know, since we're going to steward or kind of care for this together?
Troy, how do you see that? And I don't mean this to sound cynical, but how do you see those three worshiping communities that you talked about, how do you see them really working in harmony and sort of not being, how can you have one type of worshiping community that is very different than the others in the same system that also respect each other in that system, if that makes sense? I'm not sure.
Yeah,
oh,
you know, I think
sense.
Maybe, yeah, maybe just asking, you know, how are these groups going to be church together?
Yeah.
That's
a great way to put that, Jen. Thank you.
Yeah. How will the distinctively different groups be church together? I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, I'm uniquely predispositioned for this third type we're describing. And what I think happens in that third type is that there's a deeper instilling of agency in the folks who participate. So, you know, it's like those gatherings where you're able to say, this is a unique moment. The people in this room will shape the next hour we have together or whatever amount of time. What is it you're prepared to offer to shape that? I don't think that traditional liturgy, and, you know, these categories are so weird, but I don't know that necessarily the social contract is the same with other worship gatherings. If I want people to be able to say that at all the worship gatherings, but the social contract is such here over the 50 years that there's a commitment for folks to come and participate without as high stakes. And so to me, it felt pretty freeing to be able to say, that's not the only way to do it. If there are folks who can organize for change in a way that does have higher agency, go for it. And really freeing us to do that. So I actually think this group of folks will be well equipped to be kind of like family systems theory with marriage. Like, like either of the partners isn't threatening the other if they learn how to be well differentiated and to pursue their calling. It's not a zero sum game. It actually brings the level up when either of the partners takes those steps, or another family member, a kid, or whatever it is. So I think the same is true here. This is one way that it feels like this group of folks can take a step, and we don't even have the full group formed yet. But this is. It's easier to invite, I think, people of color, people with different sexual orientation, people of other backgrounds, and say, will you help build the thing that we'll participate in together? I think it's fair. I think it's a lot healthier to invite them at that level than it is to say, we believe there can be agency, but we do all the planning throughout the week on our own, and then pitch it out there, and hopefully this will attract and train and equip whoever attends. I'm kind of avoiding your question in that I don't know yet how the three will work together, but I do have a really strong hunch that this is the best way to equip a group of people who aren't currently being equipped.
Does it feel like that this new group that you're offering is having to lead that charge?
Oh, we want to lead the charge. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like it would be, we don't need to be in a position where we're asking somebody to invent it for us. You're going to have Doug on the show in a couple of weeks. He does a great job where he describes churches that are for, with, or as. I don't know if you've heard that language before, but like churches that have a program that is for a group of people, and that there's a real separation between producer and consumer. And then there's with, which is this notion that some of us know more than the rest of the group, but we'll all do it together. And then as is really this sense of a group of people by us for us, like saying, here's what it means for us to shape our own liturgy, here's what it means to take responsibility for that. And there's a lot less blaming either direction, like why aren't there people executing at the level we want to execute, or why aren't there authorities solving this for us? And either way, we are the authority and we are the executors. We're the ones that have to do the action. So I think it's a really freeing option. And it almost feels like the most gracious way to do that in an existing congregation is to allow a very free option for whomever wants to opt in and let the rest, insofar as it's sustainable, do what they need to do in the meantime. Rather than saying to everybody, we're going to shut the doors unless you're going to play the high-stakes game.
Right.
I think you're spot on, Troy. And I think that's a really exciting way to think about, you know, how do we as the church, in whatever form that might take, how do we, you know, give permission for new expressions of church to be born that really are coming out of a different model. You know, we've been the church for a long time, and even, you know, with many expressions of church being sort of with, but I think it's really exciting to see really organic expressions of church being born as we together are trying to live out, you know, what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? What does it mean for us as, you know, quote unquote church leaders to really function as hosts or facilitators or conversation partners or, you know, as participants. In ways that are new and different, and I think sort of challenge what our understanding of church have been.
Well, and there's a turn, you know, a turn both that was happening in that's happened in literature and philosophy, a postmodern turn, but that postmodern turn in art has been around participation, where art was something that was observed. And there was kind of the objective viewer saying that there were these classic forms. And then it moved to being more subjective, where it was individual existential experience of this, to what is really described as the turn towards participation, where now the question is, what do the viewer and the creator share in common in this experience? And what is that, and the creator in that sense is curating an experience with her artifact instead of just creating an artifact that people can take or leave. And great musicians do this well. I mean, I saw Josh Ritter recently, and I mean, I've always loved his kind of Americana approach, but what's so unique, he's kind of this John Denver character. I don't know if y'all know what he does.
Oh,
Josh Ritter is a, but he's almost always laughing throughout the concert, and it's this sense of like, I can't believe I get to do this, you know, is what's coming coming across from his grin. And but there's a moment in which he really says yes to the room, and he lets the room own the evening and not him. And that's why we all keep coming back, you know, but because he can uniquely do that. And it is a skill set, and it is taking leadership and responsibility, but it's not the same as taking as controlling the room or managing the room. He's really letting the room own the evening. And I think great art does that and great church does that.
Yeah. No, and I just want to give, you don't know this, Troy, but Rebecca has really been shifting the way that at least the community at First Church in Manhattan has been looking at what does it mean to be to do children's music ministry.
Mm.
And, you know, I know, Rebecca, that your style with the kids is so much more participatory. And it's how are we going to make music together, and much less about let's learn these songs so that we can sing them in worship. So I'd be curious to have you talk a little bit about that, Rebecca.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that church has been around for 150 years. I mean, actually longer than that, but and so it's difficult to break 150-year-old traditions. And
just a little.
Just go ahead and get
just
that out.
Just a little.
Yeah.
Gonna put that.
And I think that working with children is really the way we should also be working with adults, because I think that in our deepest selves, everyone just wants to be included. And the beauty of Jesus Christ is that he included everybody. And so when the church, I mean, there's a lot of talk about the church excluding certain, you know, members of society. But the church excludes within its walls as well. And
oh, yeah.
I think that excluding people from participating in worship is part of that, because, oh, we're afraid that they're going to not wear the right thing. And we have those discussions at my job. We're afraid that they are not going to read slowly enough. We're afraid that they're going to sing off key, that they're not going to be able to stay in line during the processional. We do those things. What's funny is that I say all those statements, and those statements have all been made about adults and about children. So
yeah.
I find that leading a church, especially a large church, through change has to start with the children. Because we're much more likely to follow the children than we are to follow each other. And if the children are loud, it kind of gives us permission to be loud. And if the children are loved openly, then it gives us permission to love each other openly. And so at a very basic level, I mean, for example, I don't hold auditions for my choir. In fact, I don't even call it choir. You know, we have children's music. We sing together. Children are invited to make requests. Children are invited to sing as loud and proud as they want to. We talk a little bit about music theory, especially with older kids who are particularly interested in that area. But to me, that is not what that time is about. That time is about using music to sing about Jesus Christ, or the equivalent of Jesus Christ, peace, hope, love, and justice. So we sing a lot of Pete Seeger, and we do all those kinds of pieces. You know this, Troy, and you know this too, Jen. You know, it's a constant, it is a job to change tradition and to convince people. I think that's why I asked you, Troy, about, you know, the sort of cooperation. I find that, you know, traditional worship is tough to to break through and sort of convince people that there's sort of another way. The contemporary church music was, our church movement was very successful at that. You know, so many traditional churches all over the country adopted contemporary worship services.
Yeah.
Now I feel that the contemporary worship model is feeling very threatened. And it's difficult to break into the contemporary church world and say, hey, you know what, actually there might be a different way to do this that's more theologically rich and more open-minded. So I'm always curious to see how, and that, again, that's why I asked you that question. I'm wondering if you do feel resistance from anybody, and, you know, I don't want to put you, you know, use the discretion that you need to use, but
sure.
But you know, in as much frankness as you can give us, you know, what can you tell us a little bit, if any, about any kind of conflict or challenge that you face as far as sort of being the new kid on the block as far as worship style is concerned?
I mean, I can. There's some great anecdotes. But before I do, one of the things that I think this process of the last 2 years for me, the culture shift to the Midwest, the culture shift from urban to suburban, the culture shift from startup to, you know, sustaining long-term congregation, all of those shifts, one of the pieces is, what does it mean to manage change, and what does change mean in a community? And if you go back to these metaphors from arts, change is about a generative relationship with time, space, and matter. So, or maybe time, space, or matter. So we're always working, manipulating the stuff around us. We're always in a relationship with time where we're channeling it toward one thing or another, and there's a certain energy that comes from what we decide to do with the moment we have. And space, in terms of the realm that we are responsible for, kind of the footprint, if you will. All three of those things are always being traded, and they're always in kind of a progressional unfolding. And I think God, I mean, Richard Rohr would talk about God as the great allower. I think God is not a manipulator of these things. God is participating with time, space, and matter. And I think that as anybody that's in a place of leadership, and every artist is a leader in that she takes an initiative with one of those media, time, space, or matter, and decides that to focus on it with intention, and then to shape its becoming. And you can't make clay be something that's not clay. So you have to really honor clay, because it's just going to be something made of clay. It won't perform like glass or like encaustics or anything like that.
Right.
Like, it's going to be its own thing. And so I think some of the challenges when it comes to church transformation is that there are, I'll speak for myself, because I've experienced church that uses a different medium that actually puts participation within the preaching moment and puts participation and crafting within the you know, prayer is what's the old quote of singing is praying twice. So sung prayer and those things. Because of I've had those experiences, I came here and was expecting the clay to perform like glass, and it in a sense it was an unrealistic expectation. Now that community called me to come here and asked me to make them into glass in a certain way. These are kind of too grandiose to describe it exactly this way, so forget me a little bit.
Troy, I think the analogy is working for me, so hopefully it's working
for our listeners.
And at a certain point, there's the differentiated self who can say, I'm really a glass person, and as hard as I've tried, I'm not yet a clay person. I'll keep working on this if you want, but I can't promise what the outcome's going to be, because this is exposing that I just don't have a lot of experience with clay. And so the way that played out here, if we were going to write a book about it, I have some friends here that laugh and say that there should be a chapter called Singability. The way it played out here is there was music that, whether it's arrangements of praise and worship classics that people really need in order to feel at home in a praise and worship gathering, whether it's rearranging that or rearranging a hymn or writing a new song, if they if they're encountered as culturally other and somebody is intimidated at music that is other, and really has found their kind of communion with others through the accessibility of music, then suddenly we've taken away a prayer practice for folks. And it didn't matter how much I tried. There was no way for me to give back that experience the way that it had been so artfully curated by my predecessor. And so at a certain point, we kept trying at it, and it was and there was a point at which I really felt like a victim. It was like, you know, I'm not the reason people don't like this, you know. Well, that's true, but on the other hand, this is still a community looking to resource themselves through the, you know, by employing the gifts of other folks, you know. And if that's not where the gifts fit, then we're really just going to keep banging our head against the wall here. So, so you know, it's easy to say that the community is at fault. It's easy for me to say I wasn't at fault, but I think it doesn't have anything to do with fault. I think it's just that with art, when you take on a new artifact and you build a relationship with a new media, new medium, you learn things about yourself, and you learn things in the fragility of that, and that can come at a huge cost to a community. And some communities are up for that, and some communities are not prepared for that kind of cost. In my book, I talk about a documentary by the artist, I'll get there, Andy Goldsworthy. Do either of y'all know any of his work?
He's a naturalist. With him either.
He's an installation artist and a naturalist. And what he'll do is he'll create, a lot of it is ephemeral art. So like down a river, he'll send thousands of yellow, like locust leaves, and it'll look like a snake, the way that they all kind of weave together, and they'll just head down this river, and he had carefully tied each of those leaves to one another. Another is he'll spend weeks and months excavating certain types of clay and then break them into a dry pigment, and then he'll get to a place where when a certain wind is coming through a canyon, he'll throw the pigment up, and you can watch it against the colors of the canyon and see the wind move. So in this documentary called Rivers and Tides, where you get to see a lot of his live art stuff, because up till then it's all been just photographed, they show him working on using a type of almost like a flagstone, but from a beach, so it's much more fragile, these long flat stones, and I think he's off the coast of Nova Scotia, and he's building something in the shape of a cone. So it's kind of like an egg, right, where it's wider at the bottom and then comes up. And and if you imagine, he's here on the shore bringing these stones. He's got a couple other apprentices and laborers that bring him some of the stone, but he's building a cone that's going to be probably 5 feet wide. And so at its base, it's only 2 feet wide, and then it goes out to five, and then it's going to come back in, and it's going to be about 6 feet tall, a huge cone. And so he's building this circle over and over. And he gets about 2 feet up, and suddenly the structure just falls. And you realize he's been working on this all morning. So he gets it again, he puts it, and they show him start again. And this time it gets a little bit higher, and suddenly the structure falls. And now the water's starting to come in, because part of what he'll do is he'll build these and then let the tides come up to them so that you see less and less of the egg the cone until it goes back out. It's just fascinating. And on the third one, he's going, and he gets up to, you know, 4 feet of the six-foot piece. And again, the inside implodes and it falls, and you know, with the dramatic music and all this kind of stuff. And he basically says, "These are not failures; these are explorations in my relationship with the stone.
Wow.
That's
and,
really beautiful.
I think that's what change is
mm-hmm.
about our exploration with a new medium in front of us. And this is what new creation is. God is always giving us an opportunity to encounter the other, and in that encounter with the other is this opportunity to learn and to let go of our notion of success or how we will leverage this new learning, but to actually be a learner and a listener and a perceiver. So I've learned in these 2 years that I'm not a particularly good praise and worship leader. on the other hand, I write
and,
good
company. And that's okay.
Yeah. I write pretty good music, and it works in different communities. I mean, if you put me in with the hipsters in Inman Park in Atlanta, you know, we knocked it out of the park and made an album out of it and all this stuff. So, but it doesn't fit everywhere. So
yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah, and it's okay for us to recognize and admit that, you know, even within our own particular Christian communities, that we don't all experience God the same way, and we it's okay to have these very different expressions of church, even within you know, the same bounds, the same kind of box, if you will, within the same community. A couple of weeks ago, I guess it was about 4 weeks ago, right, Rebecca? Or I guess it was six. We had Sarah Buteau, who is in Massachusetts, Northampton, Mass., and is doing a really creative, interesting, what they're calling, their community is calling a farm-to-table dinner church that is being, you know, has been adopted, if you will, by the First Churches of Northampton, which is a historic UCC congregation. And they brought, much like you, Troy, they brought Sarah on staff. Part of her position is working with the children and youth from the current worshiping community at First Churches, their Sunday morning worship, and also bringing to life Common Ground, which is their farm-to-table church, which meets on Thursday night. And now is, you know, kind of looking to move from once a month to twice a month, and really is a complete, you know, is drawing and is moving, the Spirit is moving among a very different sector of the community. But Sarah tells this wonderful story of how after this, you know, this decision was made to sort of bring Common Ground into First Churches, she realized, okay, there's great space, there's a great kitchen there for us to prepare, but before we go in there and cook, you know, that kitchen has not been used in decades. So, you know, there's things there and there's resources, but they're not organized and nobody, and I'm not even sure, you know, she's thinking, I'm not even sure what's there. And this is not the kind of church, this is kind of the more social justice-y kind of UCC church and not kind of the church dinner. Church. So she decides she's going to go over to the church and attack the kitchen one day. And when she gets there, there are two women from the traditional, you know, the ongoing community of First Churches that were just finishing up organizing the kitchen. And they've gone through the cabinets and they've labeled everything. And these are women who, you know, these folks are not going to come to Common Ground. I mean, these are Sunday morning church members who have been there forever and ever and ever. And she was just so touched because they knew what they could give
to Common Ground was this level of hospitality.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
And they just looked at her and said, well, if you're going to be using this kitchen, we knew something had to be done with the kitchen. So they did that. Went and did it. And I love that story. I love to retell the story. And I get a little choked up every time I retell it because I think it really does speak to this, the ways in which very disparate worshiping communities can be churched together and can offer very different gifts to what it means to be in community and communion with each other.
Yep, absolutely. That's great.
Yeah, I loved talking to Sarah about that. And I also love Troy talking about, you know, it just sounds, and I don't know if this is just because this is my community, but it just sounds like so much of this is happening all over the country and all over the world, too. You know, people are looking for something. I mean, I've had people say, oh, well, it's the economy. You know, people are desperate, and so they want to go back to church. And, you know, like I said before, people want to feel included, and people want to be, you know, a part of something that's making real change. And, you know, I'm wondering, Troy, do you see that as a for lack of a better term, do you see it as a trend? You know, we talk about bandwagon ministry. what's the sustainability?
In terms of a trend like that. Yeah.
Right. What's the sustainability?
Becoming a fan when you get to the Final Four,
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, what's the sustainability? Do you see this type of worship being available and relative, relevant, you know, in many, many years to come?
I mean, I think there is a lot of shifts happening all at once. And so I don't think we know the way that when the shifts were coming so slowly to us, we kind of knew what we could, you know, somebody could say something authoritatively about 10 years from now, you know. And I think now it's more like, can somebody say something compelling enough about 10 years from now to keep our attention? I don't really know if there is a technique that is missing that's now, you know, because there's a new thirst that's being discovered and it'll renew things. I love with the guys at the with the new parish, the women and men in Seattle area, what they're up to and their notion of parish in a way that is community transformation. I don't think they are technique oriented, but I think that they're kind of articulating what seems to me to be a common trend. It makes sense out of the emerging church conversation that's been really mm-hmm. integral to my life over the years. It makes a lot of sense of the new monastic movement. It makes sense of even things like Occupy or TED Talks.
Sure.
Not TED Talks, but IDEO. That's more like design. How design process works and who's involved in design process. All that stuff begins to make sense when you look at those trends. So, I mean, my thought is that practices, that intentional practices are only now becoming something to talk about in a commonplace way. Mm. And I think that the Christian mystic tradition has had these practices, but we forever thought that was for a group of people that lived in cloisters. And now as we're beginning to see a deeper awareness of the benefits of mindfulness and the benefits of Zen and some other alternative ways that communities have practices, and then you add, you know, everything since kind of Hauerwasian sense of what are exilic practices and all of the Lilly and Calvin research around practicing communities, and all of this I think is shifting. What I don't know is if it will ever be an attractive product to offer people practices. And so I think the shift you're talking about is true. I don't know that after everybody's kind of gone through a fad of having a practice or two, that they're going to continue to pay the church to provide these practices for them. In that sense, I guess I'm a little fatalistic or apocalyptic about the role of church in society. I don't think we're going to be a service provider. I think we'll be communities of practice. And that is sustainable because it shouldn't cost anything. People can practice together as a practicing community. And so right now we're in a period where we're kind of a hybrid of what that could mean and what it means now for some of us that still get some employment in that way. I mean, we talk about transition. In the long range, I don't think my work of curating practices is going to always be subsidized by a community of faith who pays somebody to do that for them. I think that's a little too Pollyanna of me. And so some of the work I do now is working with artists and creatives and professionals to simply say, are you thinking about practices? Because I have as a Jesus follower and just having been around the block, kind of a wealth of knowledge around these practices and the importance of them. I mean, I'm still a beginner in most of them, but the importance of being intentional about my life and the process of life. And so I'm doing this event in Austin, I mentioned earlier. We're calling it Life as Art, and it is in partnership with Austin Seminary and with Servant Church, a Methodist church there that's in a kind of not yet gentrified kind of creative community sort of thing. And the object of that gathering is that social entrepreneurs, so people that are doing missional work but figuring out how to fund it itself, how it can be self-funding, getting them in the same room with artists, folks who have figured out how to cobble together the grants and the other odd jobs and that sort of stuff to still get their provocative work out into the world, and get them those two groups of folks together with faith leaders, folks who are forming communities or forming projects like we're talking about today. And the whole purpose of that gathering is for folks to think about the time, space, and matter that we work with, and to think through the creative process that we apply to all these other things in life that we're beginning to learn. When you talk about a shift in culture, I think there is a rising awareness of design thought and the process that's involved between risking and brainstorming and stepping away and integrating and others and integrative thought, all that. So to apply that skill set to that group of people that they would learn from one another, so that when I leave Austin, there's a group of folks who have learned from one another's stories how to sustain faithful creative life. Part of me feels like that's a more marketable commodity than being a pastor who can do that with a small group of folks in Finneytown or Northside, Ohio. So it's a mixed bag there. It's not because I think that the church is over. I just think the church as a funding mechanism for a group of clergy is the writing's on the wall that that's not sustainable.
You know, I think about that a lot because I work in this huge building. I mean, the physical building itself, costs a lot of money just to keep the lights on. And I asked someone one time what they thought would become of that building in the next 50 years. And this person's response was very quick and very frank. He looked at me and he said, I think it's going to be an apartment building. And I found that to be kind of sad, because I think the building is useful, even if it's not used as like a worship place. But, the space, I think, should be considered as to how we can use them as more like community centers, as opposed to just selling it to the highest bidder.
Here's the tricky part is because space is always changing and material things are always changing, it's really hard to know what it means to respond to the context. I mean, I was sitting
Absolutely.
today one of the lay leaders at the church, he's a surgeon for the children's hospital, for the ER and children's hospital here in town. And I was meeting him to work on some of our session document stuff. And as we were sitting there afterwards, he showed me kind of from the ninth floor, we could see all of the children's hospital campus. And it's grown from the mid 80s where they had 2,200 employees to now where they have 14,000 employees.
Wow.
And we looked out and he talked about all the different buildings that have popped up and all the, you know, the different stuff. And in the middle, and this wasn't the point of his conversation, but it reminds me of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He pointed out, he was like, this used to be the child care center for all of children's hospital employees. And he's like, I'm not sure what's happening with that right now because everybody's becoming increasingly aware that the property value of that site is so high, it's not the best strategic use of that space.
Hmm.
And so,
yeah.
So at a certain point, the notion that because we got there first, this
right.
now should all it's always going to be best for the community to use it toward this end, it's kind
right.
of a scarcity model. I think there will be other sacred places in Finneytown, the neighborhood I'm in, or in New York City, that don't require us to hunker down and make sure we don't lose this one, you know?
Yeah, right.
I was just going to say, Rebecca, as you know, as we think
you
through,
do talk over each other. Y'all are great.
See
do.
What I'm saying?
It's
yeah.
our shtick. It's what we do. But as we think about, you know, what is, you know, the amazing thing and the piece that I just trust and sort of know deeply embedded within my soul is that the Church of Jesus Christ, as followers, the church, you know, kind of small c, not capital C, church, will continue.
Yeah.
Because it has for 2,000 years, and it has changed over time.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been those big, you know, kind of seismic shift changes. And, you know, Phyllis Tickle has certainly argued that we are in the midst of another one of those seismic shifts. And
absolutely.
I really, you know, I have a tough time believing that she's not right. I mean, that mm-hmm. I think we're seeing the effects in traditional worshiping communities almost without exception are declining and losing members and are downsizing. The ones that aren't really are the ones who are sort of in this creative space of how do we do church in a way that's different, that is more participatory, is more creative, is more artistic. Because that's what our, you know, the generations I think that sort of come after me are growing up to expect. I mean, there's just this sort of this expectation of creativity and participation and the sit, listen, and learn model of the way that we've been doing church is definitely the church of the past.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
But I also see. I find it. In case you hadn't noticed from the sound of my voice, I find this very exciting, and I think it's just incredible opportunities for what does it mean to live out the gospel in
mm-hmm.
this
mm-hmm.
time of life? What is this going to look like? How does
yeah.
this how does this come about? How do we honestly, in my mind, participate with the Holy Spirit in what the Holy Spirit is doing and moving
well,
in the world.
Yeah, and I think, Jen, like, I'm totally with you. Like, this is exciting. And it's a little bit scary for me because I had somebody recently tell me, I'm starting seminary on September the 2nd, and I had someone tell me recently that all the new seminarians now, at least the ones who are on an ordination track, are all pioneers because the church does not treat, is not going to treat clergy the same way that they have over the past, you know, gajillion years. And that now, like, clergy are going to have to
you know, do all this other stuff, and it's not, and the definition of what church leaders do is changing. I mean, I'm all for that. In fact, I think that that's what I was born to do. But, you know, it feels like, wow, like I don't think that I'm just going to graduate from seminary and get ordained and then, like, you know, get a nice little associate pastor job at a,
good.
You know, at a little Presbyterian yeah. church in Nebraska. Like, I don't think that's going to happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
I don't
probably,
think,
like you said, Troy, that's probably good because
yeah, it's good that you
will.
Don't. Yeah, you're not. You don't think. I mean, the truth is, I'm sitting here racking my brain. I can't think of any profession that can say otherwise.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I think,
that's really true.
I think it's just when you kind of sit in the seminary circles for so long, you feel like we're being let down by the system or something like that, or society's
mm-hmm.
gone to hell in a handbasket because they're not providing for us. But, you know, I just don't think – I think an attorney gets out and has to figure out the hustle now and has to figure
that's
out how,
exactly
to, how
right.
to do an online web form because they can't afford a secretary for what they do, you know. And
yeah.
And you've got – I mean, at every level, you've got folks who are learning these other creative disciplines, you know, as thought workers, you know, which I think goes back around full circle to why the that should be reflected in the changing worship practices, because the actual skill set needed to negotiate, to navigate life, is very different. And so, because there are so many different decisions and so many encounters with alternative options,
right.
how we discern and encounter those options without an acquisitiveness where we want to just have more and more, and without a anxiety and kind of ostrich effect where we don't want to know anything about the choices, what does it mean to generatively engage all these choices? Well, that's why worship has to be intensely participatory. On the other hand, that's also why worship has to be apathetic and completely emptying, because you have to listen
yep.
for a deeper voice than your own compulsivity to navigate those kind of choices. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just going to try and kind of bring us around because we're getting towards the end of our hour, which is hard to believe. I know. It goes so incredibly fast, and
right.
I'm really appreciative, Troy, of you coming on the show tonight. I just want to say, last week, Gavin and I were part of a team teaching the Art of Transitional Ministry out at one of the Presbyterian Camp and Conference Centers on Lake Tahoe. And,
a rough week on Lake Tahoe.
I know.
So sorry
it was
for
such
you.
A rough week, and somebody's going to do it. But you know, one of the learnings coming out of that, and sort of, you know, had that going in was, you know, all ministry is transitional ministry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there is no quote-unquote ministry that is not transitional because we are all constantly, you know, because what you said, Troy, I think is so true, that all of life is transitional. I mean, we started out the hour talking about how we are all in our own way in transitions, whether it's physical transitions and vocational transitions,
mm-hmm.
but that's just the reality of life in the 21st century. There's an amazing YouTube video, and it's been updated, did you know, 2014. There are several on the web.
Did you know?
There's one amazing one. If I'll have to go back and find it. So everybody is listening, I'm going to post it to our Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca Facebook page. So go there, like us on Facebook, look for it there. But, you know, it really talks about, you know, what is it that the challenges that we're facing are that, you know, the position that people who are graduating from college today will have in 10 years. Haven't even been created yet.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, this is the world that we live in. So the idea of sort of traditional education and the, you know, what was for my parents and yours, maybe yours too, was, you know, you go in one job and you stay in that job and you retire out of that job 40 years from now. I know that I've already in my life had
12-ish position, and I'm only 50.
Right.
I'll probably have, you know, another 12 before I'm, you know, retire or die or whatever. I mean, so it's, and it's not, it won't be uncommon for people to change jobs that frequently. It becomes the norm because there's this constant, you know, it's like change with the times or get left behind.
Right.
And so the idea of education as being sort of this constant process is really exciting. But you know what, Troy? I don't think we're done with this conversation.
No.
I would love to have you back on in a couple of months. And once you're started to sort of moved and maybe some of the work that you're kicking off has gotten started, and I think we'd love to have you back and have an update on that transition.
That'd be great. Yeah, and if any folks want to see, like, look into more of the stuff that I do writing-wise, troybronson.com has my, you can see the book and as well as this event we're going to do in Austin, as well as some of the music that I do. So that'd be a way, too, for folks to kind of connect further.
That would be awesome. It'd be great to have you back after the event in Austin. I know we didn't even get to touch on Drawn In, which is Troy's book. So just encourage everybody to go into the website, troybronson.com, and find out more about him. And, again, as we wrap up, Rebecca, last words for you.
Thank you, Troy. I mean, like I said, I'm in this community, so I hear a lot about church and change, but I it's just refreshing to hear these voices coming from all over the country, and it's refreshing to hear it from artists and musicians. So thank you for your work, and you know, thank you for sharing with our community, and thank you everybody out there for listening. And we'll see you in a couple weeks, or we'll hear you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Rebecca. Just everyone, thank you for listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. We are on every second and fourth Monday of the month, except in September, it's going to be the third and the fifth Monday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'd love to have you on most of our shows. As I said, are broadcast live, and you're welcome to call in. This one, because of the transitions that we're all in, is coming to you as a pre-recorded version. But we are excited to, in 2 weeks from tonight on August 25th, welcome Doug Padgett, who will be with us live. We encourage you to call in and ask questions, give comments, just be a part of the conversation, and like our Facebook page, Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca, and that way we can keep you up on our guests and those who have been on previous shows and those who will be coming up on future shows. So, again, thank you, everyone, and have a great night.
Good night.
Good night.